Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
WrestleMania Night 2 is in the books. Historic is one word I would use for it. Mike Riley, I will start with you since I feel like you're going to be the more positive of the two of us. Mike Riley, what did you think of Night 2 of WrestleMania?
So it was a great opening match with Charlotte and Rhea Ripley. Fantastic. The second best opening match I can think of off the top of my head, the closest one was Shane McMahon and AJ Styles in Orlando, WrestleMania 33. This was a top to bottom, good in-ring performance by both of them. Charlotte did win. She's your new NXT champion. I thought it was going to set the tone for a pretty good show. And for on the paper, Night 2 had, I think, more star power than Night 1 going into it. But, overall, I thought it was okay. We're recording just a few minutes after the WWE Championship, which came on the heels of the Firefly Funhouse. So I have some thoughts on that. I thought it was funny, some moments in there, but I'm like, oh my God, this is just bizarre. Overall, I thought the production was pretty good stuff. The Edge and Randy Orton match, I think, not taking anything away from them, what they did in the match, I think it was overhyped, though. And the reason why I don't think the match came across as good as I thought it would was because of the horrific commentary by Todd Phillips and Byron Saxton in that match. It was terrible. And so many tweets, people saying it straight out, they hit the nail. Nail on the head with everyone saying that, oh, they call it a golf match or are they doing a tennis match? It was awful. So many maneuvers in the back of the performance center there where Edge and Randy Orton going at each other. No reaction. You needed Jim Ross there. You needed Amaro Rinaldo, one of those guys. Even Tony Schiavone, someone with emotion. There was nothing from those guys, and that made that match just so dragged out. But from what they gave us, I was very pleased with it. I thought the tag team match was good. The Street Profits put on a good fight. The SmackDown, I was surprised Bayley won. I think if that were in front of a live crowd, we would have seen a Sasha Bayley turn one of the two on each other, but didn't happen. Overall, not a bad show. I like Night 1 better, but for what they had to work with, I think they gave the fans a good product for the weekend, considering all the circumstances going on in the world right now.
I thought Night 2 was terrible.
Really?
I like the Charlotte Rhea Ripley match. Yep. I've got details on the good and the bad of that. The Firefly Funhouse I thought was awesome. I thought it was well produced. Otis getting Mandy Rose was good stuff. Everything else didn't need it. Just dragged on, just was not filling the palate. Was not entertaining to me at different points in time. So, Mike, I will ask you, do you want me to start with the good or the bad?
Go ahead. Start with the good.
All right. The good, the best thing on the show, was the Firefly Funhouse.
Really?
Yes.
You think so?
I love this stuff.
I got to go Charlotte Ripley. But go ahead.
That's fine. You're biting my style with Charlotte. It's fine. I thought the Firefly Funhouse was awesome, but it wasn't awesome in the way that AJ and Undertaker was just a fine piece of business. The mini movie with Cena and Bray was just fun, going through Cena's debut and the SmackDown fist. Give me a good fist any day of the week. The Saturday night's main event intro to the Doctor of Thuganomics stuff. The Wyatt clip showing the history with Cena at WrestleMania 6 years ago. And the crowd begging for Bray Wyatt to win, only for Cena to come back and beat him. And then the Eric Bischoff video cameo from the Nitro days and Bray Wyatt wearing the NWO shirt and the leather jacket. Cena wearing an NWO shirt and then beating up a puppet. And the Vince McMahon puppet calling this is such good bleep, which of course is a rib on the Dean Ambrose stuff. And right. A common line that Vince uses apparently when he comes up with an idea that he loves. Through that, the Fiend appeared behind John Cena, put him in the claw, and then Cena's promo coming back into Wyatt's head as Wyatt put Cena down and counted a three count, presumably for a win. And then the Fiend posed as Cena's body disappeared. So I liked that because it was fun for me kind of reliving like the Saturday night's main event steel cage match and
right.
Seeing Eric Bischoff pop up. And if you look through the different videos, you see CM Punk kissing away the WWE championship in Chicago, all those cool moments. They kind of sung to me, and then they cut to Titus O'Neil acting like he watched the whole thing. And is like, I don't know what I just saw. And I don't know. I saw an overproduced mini movie and I enjoyed it. Like I popped at the different moments I was supposed to. And that's why I think that this was the best thing on the show, but it was drastically different than last night's. And I think I see a lot of online stuff. The thing that I actually enjoy about this is you either loved this or you hated this.
You're talking about the Firefly Funhouse.
Both mini movies, the Firefly Funhouse or the Boneyard Graveyard match from the night before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they were very different. They were very, very different.
Oh, God,
But the Cena Wyatt thing, I enjoyed it because it was steps through careers and moments and stuff like that I all popped for. And a lot of it was inside jokes. Like the Vince McMahon puppet is an inside joke.
Right.
And that's what it is. And I get it. And, you know, maybe most of the audience gets it. We'll find out. But I thought it was good stuff. I really thought it was good stuff.
You know, there were some good moments in there. Like I said, I thought it was bizarre. It was funny, though. They're talented. I mean, John Cena showing his true Hollywood style there. He's able to do all that stuff. So I was okay with it. It was funny. It was funny. But it was very bizarre. Very bizarre. And traditional, maybe it was me with the Boneyard match because it was an actual fight. I thought we were going to get an actual fight out of it. And you just saw John Cena get squashed. He's squashed. This is the second time in 3 years he has put someone else over for him. And again, that's just the kind of guy he is. But it was a squash. It was stupid at the end.
But not everything. So.
But it was funny.
Have you had social interactions with John Cena at all?
Yes, once. Very nice guy.
Okay, so I've had multiple, and John's a little bit, I don't want to say goofy because that's the wrong word, but he's like super nice, super polite. He's a little goofy at times. So like I can see him not only participating in this script, mm-hmm. but maybe having a lot of... his personality in this script. Just feel like that this is John Cena. Like this is a part of John Cena. And if it's not, it's Vince McMahon's creation. And John's like, if that's what you want me to do, I'll do it. But I feel like this had a lot of John Cena in it. Yeah. But I liked it. I thought this was the best part of the show.
See, I think that's strong, best part of the show, but that's your opinion. That's okay.
And here's why. Just to transition, like the best actual match of the night was the opening match. It was Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair. Charlotte wins the NXT championship. Good, hard-hitting, I don't want to say strong style match, because I felt like Charlotte, I feel like there were a lot of points where Charlotte just ate Rhea Ripley up and told the story of working on the leg, because it leads to the figure eight, the figure right. four into the figure eight, which Rhea Ripley ultimately tapped out to. But why this wasn't the best part of the show is because I don't think Charlotte should be in NXT.
Well,
and
okay.
and of course, like Charlotte Flair against Candice LeRae and Dakota and Mia Yam, and maybe if Shayna Baszler goes back to NXT, those are all dream matchups. Those are all matches that I would be interested in. It like I was interested in Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair, and it delivered for me. But Charlotte doesn't belong in NXT. She belongs on SmackDown. That's the WWE's prime show. That's where she should be, in my opinion. And that's why, while this is a great match, and I'm happy that Charlotte won. Trust me, I'm happy that Charlotte wins everything. Like,
yep. You're a Charlotte honk.
It just doesn't... I don't think that it fits with what Charlotte is. Charlotte is big time matches and the aura of the entrance and in front of as many people as possible, because she's the flagship. She's the flagship for the women's division, and she's on NXT. And that to me just doesn't, for how WWE would, I think if you put the pecking order for WWE, it would be SmackDown, Raw, NXT, because they can't seem to beat AEW on Wednesday night,
right?
Because if they really put a priority on beating AEW, then you would see more people go there. And Charlotte hasn't made the big ratings difference that I think they anticipated. Maybe now as champion they will. Maybe they'll start putting more people on there, but I don't know. You've got a pandemic going on, so they have NXT taped on Wednesday. From I don't know where they're going to shoot. Supposedly they're going to shoot from an undisclosed location this week, more content, but they may not get there.
Well, you know, just like I said last week here on the show, the full preview show, that I thought she'd win this because of the fact of the ratings for NXT without a fan base there, and it's a draw. It's a draw as Charlotte to be your champion there. And it's also a way for WWE to tell the story of Charlotte of becoming a 16-time champion. She's now one step closer. That's 11 for her now, 11 championships. So, again, Rhea Ripley had a really good match there. She's 23 years old. I think if this match had been in Tampa in front of a crowd, I think Ripley would have won with the reaction and so forth. But, you know, here we are. Charlotte is going to be on NXT, and I really believe it's for a television rating boost draw to have her. You get the queen, Charlotte Flair on NXT Wednesday nights. You know, you don't have to have her on Monday Night Raw. You still have enough star power there. You could throw her, you don't need her on SmackDown. You have a 2-hour window there. So here you are, NXT. They need that boost, and that's what they're going to get, that injection of Charlotte Flair.
Yeah, Charlotte should be on SmackDown, and that's what they did all summer long of promotion, and then she ends up on NXT. And, like, look, I'm happy. Like I mentioned, dream matches, the whole shebang, but she shouldn't be there. She shouldn't be there. You know, the other positive
business decision.
Yeah, it's a business decision, but it's a bad business decision, because, again, if Charlotte Flair is the greatest female athlete going today, and that's the argument that a lot of people will make, I will make that argument. Then why is she on NXT?
To play devil's advocate, they have a head-to-head situation with AEW, and we also don't know the future of this pandemic here without a crowd. You need that draw. That's all it is. That's why.
And
that's the best answer I can give you.
Yeah, it's fine. Speaking of people who draw, like Otis gets the girl. Otis gets the win over Dolph Ziggler. This was the only other thing I liked on the show was... And this was actually the best part of SmackDown on Friday, was the reveal of how Mandy Rose was on time, but Sonya Deville texted Otis from Mandy's phone, and this whole saga drama. And Otis has a thing. Otis has this weird charisma that is fascinating to me. And he was in there with Dolph, who we love Dolph. Dolph is a great worker. Dolph made Otis look like $1 million. And Otis got Mandy, which I assume he's a friend with a writer, and that's how he got that spot, because that's a good spot to be in, right?
Oh, yeah.
But that was the only other thing on the show that I liked, was Otis getting the win, getting Mandy Rose, and let's see where they go with it. Maybe the logical conclusion is Otis and Mandy get married on TV, or they do another wedding angle, because those things actually usually draw a rating, or they draw YouTube views or whatever, even though we just had one between Lana and Bobby Lashley that got interrupted by Liv Morgan.
Right.
But that was the only other thing that I liked on the show, Mike.
Really? That was that was your only other thing, huh? Damn.
Yeah.
I thought it was a funny, it was a good finisher. Mandy came down and gave Dolph the low blow there. That was good. And, you know, just holding her to the, holding her up after that, and getting a kiss from her. Holy cow. That was funny. That was good stuff. And Dolph sold it very well with everything there, and Otis to put him over. But I did enjoy that. That was funny. Overall, though, you know, you weren't a fan of Edge and Orton, though, huh?
36 minutes of just did not connect with me. Not connect with me. Because I've seen so many of these Last Man Standing matches, to me, can be like Gargano and Ciampa, when they did theirs, I thought it was great because all these different spots, they made sense. They tied into stories. This was them just fighting all over the building. I appreciate the fact that Hunter gave us a tour of the Performance Center, which was something that we were supposed to have in Orlando and didn't happen, and something that NXT people promised to all the media members is, oh yeah, come down to Orlando, we'll give you a tour of the Performance Center. Didn't happen, but we got one on the WWE Network for $10 a month. So it was very nice of Hunter for a 36-minute tour of the Performance Center. But see, I'm not usually a fan of these Last Man Standing matches because you kind of know when people, when there are false finishes. Like, did anybody think that Randy Orton coming out of the photographer, the camera spot was going to hit the RKO and beat Edge within a minute?
That was cool, though. That
right?
was cool.
Like, the Flash Open was good, but that wasn't the end. We all knew that wasn't going to be the end.
Yeah, we had a long way to go.
And so going from there, they're just fighting. Like, Edge isn't going to win with an elbow off a steel cage that's on top of their conference room.
Right.
Right? And so maybe if, like, I was kind of expecting an RKO off the top of the truck, but that didn't happen. And then when Orton brought up the two chairs, I'm like, okay, well, Edge is going to win with the concerto. And there were other stupid moments where Orton and Edge are both breaking up 10 counts because they want to do more moves. Like, Edge put Orton to sleep or choked him out or whatever. And then he told the referee to stop counting because he wanted to do something more violent. Like, are you trying to win the match, or are you just trying to beat the hell out of your opponent?
Yeah, I hated that finish.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the concerto finish made sense, but not after Edge stops the referee from counting for sleep, because Orton was flat and out. And then the chair was underneath him, and Edge hits Orton with the concerto, the second chair, and then all of a sudden Randy Orton's moving.
Yeah. That was unnecessary. No need for that. And it did drag out. It started off, you know, I mean, they did go backstage.
Well, Mike, did you like the drama? Did you what aspect of this match did you like?
Not much. And again, the commentary part, that absolutely killed it for me. They could have amped it up a little, brought more excitement to it, and they just had absolutely asleep at the wheel, and it brought no excitement to me. If they were a little more into it or excited, I'd probably be into the match more. But I just, you know, there was a DDT on the pickup truck for Randy Orton. That was pretty much the highlight, 25 minutes into it, I guess you could say. And after that, I'm like, all right, yeah. But there was no need for Edge to hit that chair shot there to Randy Orton at the end. And then he goes down to him after and is saying something to him. I'd imagine, like, I love you or something. But I was not 100% into this because of the commentary there. They really could have made it better for the fan base, because these guys were just going at it back and forth, and it was just the fact that it was not in the arena they killed 36 minutes off of the pay-per-view to give everyone a different landscape there instead of, you know, not being in front of the crowd, to their credit, what they did. And that's where the commentary failed tremendously.
And I felt like a jackass because I thought this match should have main evented one of the two nights. And like I saw the online stuff. There were people who were into it. There were people who loved it. I hated it. I thought it drug on. But again, like, my favorite Last Man Standing match was Ciampa and Gargano, and that's NXT, and NXT seemingly can't have a bad match.
Right.
You know, prior to that, I couldn't tell you a Last Man Standing match that I really loved.
I can't think of one.
And maybe there's one out there that I sung the praises of, but this match was 36 painful minutes. And like, I sat there watching it and I'm like, is there something wrong with me? Why am I not connecting with this match? Like, I was talking to some people today about the Becky Lynch Shayna Baszler match, and they were like, I can't believe you didn't like that match because it was hard hitting, it was physical. And I'm like, there was a disconnect with me with that. It didn't vibe, and the finish was kind of flat. And you know, there might be more to that Becky Shayna match story to be told, but this Edge Orton match, just this was supposed to be the blow off, I think.
Yeah.
But
two legends.
You don't know. Like, and then it's like, well, who's Edge's next opponent?
Right.
And I thought Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
You know, do you do Roman Reigns? Do you do Daniel Bryan? Like, who's Edge's next opponent? And probably the answer is Edge isn't going to have another opponent for a long time because, you know, live crowds aren't going to be welcome into buildings until August or September, according to the president. So now SummerSlam's in jeopardy, although they announced Money in the Bank for May 10th, and
It's not in Baltimore, though.
It's not in Baltimore because Baltimore canceled it. So
right.
Where is it going to be? They have Raw taped, they have NXT taped, and they need to find some place to film for Friday and going forward. And we're not sure. They're not sure. Like,
I was surprised to see that they actually promoted that there. And this is where I thought they could have, for the next month, you could, you know, live off, oh, this would happen to WrestleMania, not next month, but at least 2 weeks worth of programming. This would happen to WrestleMania, then have a draft. And if you really want to go Money in the Bank, go ahead. But otherwise, I'd hold off on it.
That's, you know,
really...
and here's the other thing. And I texted you and Joe Murray this, and I was trying to, I got a text today telling me who Patient Zero was. And
oh,
I'm
yeah.
not giving out that name because that's not my place to. Let somebody else do it.
We'll know tomorrow.
As we're taping this, I'm surprised it's not out there. Maybe it doesn't get out there unless I have bad info, which is perfectly plausible. The person who gave me this would know. So if there is a Patient Zero who has gotten this virus, then that shuts down WWE. But yeah, it does. It does, Mike.
Really?
It does. It has to.
You can't quarantine them?
It has to shut everything down because this person was in contact with a lot of people.
Jeez, but I don't know about that. Yeah. I don't know. I'm gonna take a pet. I don't know. I think you can get away with it a little bit. They'll find a way to work around it, especially if they're promoting all these shows now. They'll find a way.
I hope you're right.
They 100% will. They're not going to. They can't shut it down.
You know, in fairness, Mike, like, I did like the Street Profits match. That was some good action. The story of Bayley and Sasha for the women's title, you know, was good stuff, and it just continues that. But those were the exceptions. Like, Aleister Black, yeah, he's on the upward push. You know, Lashley's lost two WrestleManias in a row.
Gronk, 24/7 champ.
Oh.
Hey, he's a four-time world champion now. There you go. Congratulations.
Yeah.
No,
Mike, give me some positivity.
Okay. So,
like, you're all in on this stuff. You seemingly liked just about everything.
No, not at all. No, I like night one better. The Charlotte Ripley match was great. That was my favorite one. Edge Norton had some good moments, but again, dragged way too long. Commentary killed it. I'm being negative now.
Good.
The Street Profits match was good. And I really did. You know, let me tell you another thing, too. Just go back to Charlotte and Ripley, especially the talking in that match was fantastic. Like, they had so many good lines with one another. Rhea Ripley, get in my ring, princess. Her attire was great. Charlotte with the homage to her father with the CF, Charlotte Flair on the boots. I thought that was great. She's done that before. Continuous trash talk. I made NXT. You know, the brand is because of me. So I could see these two going at it again. You know, maybe have a rematch over the next month or so, or just, you know, pick up another match on the main event stage. I thought this is a good step, though, in the right direction for Rhea Ripley, and it's going to be interesting to see what NXT does with Charlotte. But just to continue with the positivity here, Street Profits match, I think that was a good spot for it there. Happy for Drew McIntyre, too. Like, I saw his Chronicle today, actually, and it really, like, I was supposed to be in Tampa this weekend and trying to put all that behind me, not even think about it, but it really hit me today. I'm like, oh, my God. This stinks because Drew McIntyre was ready to have his WrestleMania moment in front of a crowd. Did you see the Chronicle on McIntyre?
I haven't watched that one. I watched the Edge one today.
I won't spoil it for you. But
oh, don't worry about it. You tell the listener, tell us.
Oh, you're okay. Good. So he was just, you know, he kept referring over and over, like, my WrestleMania moment, my moment. And he did say once they found out that it was not going to be in Tampa, that he'll still have his moment, essentially. So I thought, it just really hit me, though, when you see all the stuff on March 11th when the world kind of changed with, you know, NBA canceling or postponing NHL and college basketball and so forth. And then here's WWE waiting on the WrestleMania announcement. And then, you know, Drew McIntyre just kind of didn't have that. So I felt bad for him in a way, but he did win the title against Brock Lesnar. I was happy with that finish there. I think that was a good way to end night two of WrestleMania. And the event itself, he deserved that spot right there. I think if Brock Lesnar won, a lot of people would have been pissed off. I don't think they would have been happy with the whole event as a whole. So that was really good for Drew, and I think for WWE as a whole. That's my positive notes I can really think of. I'm still really hot at the commentary team, furious. Even the end of the event, too. Ted Phillips, whatever his name
Adam
is.
Adam Kaufman Light.
Yeah, exactly. No emotion. Thanks for watching WrestleMania. Like he said, thanks for watching WrestleMania, like whispering. It's like, dude, where's the emotion? He sucks. Awful. So give me Jim Ross. Something on him again. Mauro Ranallo. Any day of the week. You know that. Ugh.
I guess, like, going a little bit bigger picture here, like your two main championship fights had less than 10 minutes of ring time. And I'm starting to wonder, like, that can't be good for business, right?
No.
Like, at some point it has to transition back. Although Seth Rollins had, like, this great match with AJ Styles at Money in the Bank, and nobody remembers it, nobody cares about it. Kevin Owens and Kofi Kingston had these long matches, nobody cares about them. Or I shouldn't say nobody cares about them. The audience that cares about them is so few, but, like, you're on this run the last few weeks, and granted there's real world stuff going on, but, like, your numbers are just dropping other than like Goldberg popped a rating his first two nights, Hogan popped a rating, and now we're in this weird time frame. So, like, I don't know what the answer is. I think the answer is Kevin Owens wins one of the world titles, but that doesn't seem like it's in the cards. So now you're going with Drew McIntyre, who wins the Rumble, eliminates Brock. Now he beats Brock. So Drew McIntyre now is the chosen one again. And let's see, but what's his, is he a character that draws people in? And I'm not sure that he is. Braun Strowman is a, as Bruce Pritchard would call, a nice attraction. He's Andre the Giant. He's the airport guy, right?
Right.
But with everyone all these wrestlers knows. Having buses now, like, they don't go through the airport that often.
Right.
You know, and with the world situation it is, they're not going through airports anyway. So
no.
I sit here and I think I know the answer, but I don't know the answer. And I don't know what the answer is. It's Vince McMahon needs a hit song right now. Mm. And he doesn't have that hit song.
Well, I think last year he had it with Becky Lynch.
Right. He had a hit song. He got Ronda Rousey. Yep. He was hoping for Ronda and Charlotte. That didn't happen. It turned into Becky, Ronda, and Charlotte, and Becky won, and Becky should have won. Mm-hmm. But Becky was middle of the card this year. Like, I thought Becky and Shayna should have main evented once it was two nights. I'm like, oh, perfect. Becky gets the main event two WrestleManias in a row, and they didn't. And I thought that match was a clunker, and I'm in the minority on that, and that's okay.
No, it was not a traditional Becky Lynch kind of fight that we're used to seeing. It was just, it didn't do much. And the finish was so, you know, it wasn't very appealing to anyone. I was not a fan of the match. I didn't like it.
So, like, and Becky for a while was the biggest star in the company. And then, like, last year you put the title on Seth Rollins and the internet's happy because Brock's no longer the champion. And then the fans turn on Seth Rollins. And right. Whether that's because of his social media presence or not, like, people are like, okay, we're done with this internet darling. So now you have to find the competitor who can fight through that. And that was Becky Lynch. And I feel like her momentum isn't the same that it was. And that's her. Do we blame the performer? Do we blame creative? Do we blame both? Who do I blame? Because I need to blame somebody.
Yeah. It's, you know, again, going back to my point last night on that, I don't think she was comfortable with Shayna Baszler, needs more time with her. And maybe it's a trait of Becky not being used to working with the same people there. She's got to get the reps in with the particular individuals that she's going to be rivalries with down the line. Look what she did over time with Charlotte, Sasha Banks, even the matches with Bayley and her, and, you know, in the same match with her, much better than what we saw with Shayna Baszler. So we need to see more of that there with her. I don't know who it's going to be. Maybe Rhea Ripley. Maybe she goes after Becky Lynch. We'll see. If she gets a call up there to the draft, to Raw or SmackDown, I should say, not the call up, but on to one of those shows.
I just wonder if they're holding Becky with the title until Ronda comes back, until they know that Ronda's coming back.
And then get it off her. Yeah.
And then they have the Becky Ronda program and they go from there.
Well, just back to your
unless they just didn't feel like it doesn't feel like Vince is in on Shayna, and or maybe they just want to tell Shayna's story longer. I don't know.
Right. And just back to your point too with Drew McIntyre, is he the guy that's going to be that champion? Well, you know what? Maybe, I mean, he's over with the crowd when they're there. We know that. But this, again, it's a test for everyone here without that crowd to see how they do, you know, without the reaction and so forth. So they'll give Drew a shot, see how it goes. I don't know who's going to answer the bell for it. Like you said, Kevin Owens would be great. He'd be great. I mean, he's been at that position before, so it'd be perfect. But do you turn him heel? You know, I mean, otherwise you have two top baby faces going at each other. So that's a lot to consider there on that. Or Seth Rollins could very easily go after Drew McIntyre too. But overall, I think that was a good ending for night two of Mania. I did prefer night one over night two of WrestleMania.
Yeah, I wanted Brock to win. Yeah, I wanted Brock to win. Keep the title on Brock. Go from there, give Drew McIntyre money in the bank, and then have him cash in on Brock and let him have his championship celebration in front of people.
Now, two quick questions. What did you like better? Did you like the Firefly Funhouse or the Boneyard match production better for the movie aspect?
I liked Undertaker and AJ better because I thought there was more drama. There was more of a story. The Firefly Funhouse was just like me thinking like, oh, Saturday Night's main event promo, that's cool. Oh, Eric Bischoff, that pops me. Oh, the clip of this and that. I mean, they're just different stories being told. And, you know, I thought the AJ Taker thing was better.
Yeah, that was like a real movie. And people were just shutting that down earlier in the week going into it. That was damn good.
Yeah, and AJ Styles not being in a squared circle is criminal, but Undertaker being produced this way to protect him as much as possible was great. Was a great idea, and AJ was excellent in his role in it. So at some point, we'll see AJ and Undertaker in a squared circle, and we'll be like, "Oh, they should have just done another movie," or maybe we won't. Well, maybe that was Undertaker's last ride.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
maybe
they're doing the documentary. They're doing an Undertaker documentary, but that stuff like that is where WWE excels, is documentary storytelling.
Well, if you do Undertaker here on out in those document or the movies, rather, I think people would not be opposed to that because it was pretty well produced and overall. Even if you do get him in the ring with AJ Styles, it may not be one on one. Probably looking at a tag team match or a six man tag just to have all the other guys do the work. And the other thing, two nights, WrestleMania. Do you like that better than the one night here, or do you think that's going to be something down the line we do see two nights?
I liked it for pacing because last Saturday night was over 10 and this one was over 10:25.
Yep.
So like that's a lot more manageable than leaving MetLife Stadium at 12:30 at night and then driving all night home or, you know, to your WrestleMania party or to wherever and you can't get an Uber or you can't get out of because of traffic or... You know, I like that a lot better. I like the two nights, and I like that a lot better. With the first night of WrestleMania, I thought the pacing was excellent. The second night, it just drug on to me. It just really drug on to me, and then just WrestleMania night two just didn't click with me. There were some elements to storytelling that were fine, but I felt like I was getting, you know, my teeth cleaned or filled or, you know.
Yeah, on the dentist chair.
It was a struggle for me.
Yeah, the killer was Edge and Orton. 36 minutes. It just killed the momentum of the show. Really did. The flow of the show, I should say. But, you know, some people liked night two better than night one.
But I didn't love the Aleister Black Bobby Lashley match. That didn't do anything for me. And,
nope.
And with Otis and Ziggler, I was just waiting for Mandy Rose to do the run-in.
Yeah, it was a funny ending. It was cool. It was a good moment there for Otis, but otherwise, the flow of night two, not half as good as night one. No way.
So, I mean, that's all I got.
Yeah. You know, and good for these guys, good for WWE giving us the product for what they had to do. Again, we don't know what's going to happen here on out here with the COVID-19 crisis, but they're already promoting Money in the Bank, and I was actually surprised about that, James, because I think with the fact that it was WrestleMania, that's why they went ahead with it. Other ones, I thought they would have held off. And they're still going ahead. Money in the Bank. Very surprised about that, even with an undisclosed location where they haven't said where it's going to be.
I have a worry that because I have a named patient zero, that WWE is about to get shut down. And that's my concern.
I don't think it will. I think we'll be okay. I really do. I think they'll find a way around.
The other worry I have is SummerSlam. And SummerSlam is a beacon of hope for a lot of people. And the fact that President Trump doesn't want people in stadiums until August or September, that concerns me.
Well, the beneficial thing with SummerSlam is that it's late August. It's not like last year where it was August 11th. So you do have a little bit of time to work with here on that. But the later we get into this here, yes, it's more concerning. That's for sure.
I was hoping for Easter we'd have a cure and we'd have everything fixed. Right now, the early hope is early May. We'd like a nice Mother's Day celebration, but, you know, we'll see. So not the most positive episode of our podcast. You're welcome for that because I am to blame for it because
night two wasn't as good as night one. Wasn't.
Debbie Downer. Yeah. Hopefully we have some more fun things and we can be positive on our next edition.
We got AEW. We got the tournament coming up here. That's going to be exciting.
Oh yeah. The Raw after WrestleMania where all the fans take over. Oh wait, there won't be any fans taking over.
Jimmy rubbing salt in the wound there.
Yeah, I know. I've never liked the Raw after WrestleMania. I've always
really,
yeah, I've never liked it.
Interesting.
Never liked it because they book WWE books one night for a specific group and then they book the other 51 for what they want.
Yeah. I think it's an overhyped show. I think last year they dropped the ball big time in that main event where they had Kofi and Seth Rollins and they didn't put the titles on the line. Remember that?
The original match was title for title, winner take all, and then they turned it into a tag match.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, excuse me. That's what happened. Terrible way to finish that. And the AEW chants were starting, which was really cool.
And there was the night after Undertaker loses to Roman Reigns. Roman comes out. they boom for 15 minutes. Like, it's his fault, right?
Right.
And
right.
he just smiles and goes, this is my yard, which is exactly how he should play it.
Right.
He leaves, and Vince McMahon comes out like an hour later, and they're like doing the bow thing to Vince McMahon because he's the greatest thing in the world. Dude, Vince wrote all that.
Yeah.
Vince has been pushing Roman Reigns, and you're like, oh, yay, it's Vince. Let's cheer Vince McMahon. We, like, bow down to the king of sports entertainment who you hate most of their writing. So what are we doing here? So we're just because he's in front of us, you're like, oh, yay, bow down. It's Vince McMahon. Like, Vince has had so many hit songs, right? Yeah. But just don't cheer him because, oh, I'm pandering. I'm getting them to cheer me, announce me again so I can get a bigger pop.
Yeah.
Anywho, I would have booed Vince McMahon. But you know what? In fairness, if I were to meet Vince McMahon backstage or in a private or at Kowloon or, you know, some other place, I'd be like, Vince, thank you so much for your, like, when I met Shane McMahon at the WrestleMania party.
Yeah,
I said hello. I said, thank you for all of your years of entertainment. I appreciate it. And, you know, that was pretty much the conversation. And Vince, I would probably do the same thing, but
be thankful
in a crowd setting where it's about the story and the show. I'd boo him. I've done that. I booed the local wrestling promoter all the time. That's what you do.
Shane McMahon, when I went up to him that night too, he asked where I was from, and I said Boston, and he goes, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm like, why? And he goes, I'm a Yankee fan. I'm like, okay, I respect that. But I said, you went to BU though, so you know. Oh no, I don't like the Red Sox. Oh, that's fair, no problem. He's very open about his New York teams here, James.
That's fine, no problem.
I have no issue with that. So, just one more thing though, one positivity here, one thing. What was your favorite match from the two-net event?
I think it was the ladder match.
Yeah,
I think it was the ladder match because the finish was great. It was a unique finish. I thought the drama of that ladder match and all the aspects to it. The ladder match.
So last night when we recorded, I said that was the my match of the night.
That was a match of the year candidate. That was what you said.
Yeah, I'm going to cut down the fat on that here on out. Yes, it's on the list. It's on the list, and I will.
I have to go through your match of the year candidates because I feel like you have two from the AEW pay-per-view. You have like three from NXT Portland. You had the ladder match from last night. So you're at six candidates, and we're only in April.
Yeah, and well, I'm glad we got them while we had the fans. Let's put it that way. But I, looking back on it today, watching the event over, I'm going to go with the Kevin Owens-Seth Rollins match. And I thought Seth Rollins was a coward the way he ended it there. He had the bell for the disqualification. Good for him going back in, answering the call there for Kevin Owens. And the way Owens did go up on the sign with that maneuver, jumping off the sign there onto the announce table, was awesome. That was a great moment. That was my favorite match from the two-night event. The Undertaker match, again, in AJ Styles, I thought it was going to be hokey pokey going into it, but I really did enjoy that too. And the ladder match was great too. My top three right there for WrestleMania weekend. Oh, the Charlotte Ripley match was really good too. So those are, I think, your four best ones from WrestleMania 36 to watch.
Pretty good for somebody who's not invested in Seth Rollins. Good job, Mike.
Oh, he sucks.
Yeah. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5thesportshub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike and I will talk to you at some point next week.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in, and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds, and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.